The Busy Marketer Podcast, episode 17. Welcome to the Busy Marketer Podcast, advice and inspiration for digital marketers in all industries. Each week, I interview the best and the brightest marketing minds on topics including social media, email, landing page optimization, SEO, and more. Together, we cut through the clutter and focus on the important tasks to help you be a better marketer for your small business, church, or organization. I'm your host, 17-year online marketing veteran, BJ Smith. Today, we're talking about branding and what it really means for your organization. Stick around to the end of the episode for the latest digital marketing news and a tip on using Twitter remarketing. You'll find more about these topics in the show notes at thebusymarketer.com/17. Let's get to it. Welcome again to The Busy Marketer. I'm tweaking the format once again. Just like with any marketing experience, you should always be testing. I want to get to the interview content as fast as possible in each episode, so I'm moving the news segment to the end of the show. There's some cool stuff this week from Facebook and Twitter, so you'll want to be sure to stick around and hear that. I'm also adding in a little bit of bonus content to tell you about Twitter's new remarketing system. Now, on to the featured interview. Joining me today is my special guest, Sari Gabe. Welcome to the show, Sari.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
Sari is the president and chief creative officer at U2R1 Media. She's been featured on Global National, CTV, Toronto Star, and Rogers Daytime. She is also a writer for Huffington Post and has been named the Woman of the Week by Women's Post magazine. Sari began her educational foundation at Ryerson University in Toronto, where she took fashion marketing and communications. During that time, Sari worked at Canada's top fashion magazine, Flair, where she was hands-on in digital production, copywriting, and styling photo shoots. Sari continued her education to expand her technical expertise in web and graphic design, graduating cum laude in 2002 from Canada's highly renowned Trevis Institute of Technology. Sari founded U2R1 Media Inc. later that same year. Since opening the agency 12 years ago, Sari has had the opportunity to work with major brands, assisting them in brand development, web design, and marketing strategies. Notable clients include Old Spice, who use Sari and her team to launch new products across Canada with the use of new branding and audience building through multiple digital means. Sari and her team have also worked with Pearson Education Canada, North America's largest publishing company, to build a custom online social network called Study Life, which was used as a tool to connect various students in different classes, assisting them in finding appropriate study mates to help in preparation for exams and classes for university. This tool would connect students across Canada in all universities and courses. Since moving to the U.S. 2 years ago, Sari and her team have had the opportunity to build strategies and launch international brands into the U.S. market. Sari, that's just a little info, and I know it barely scratches the surface. Why don't you tell us a little bit more about you personally to help our listeners get to know you better?
Thank you. That was actually a great intro. I started off in fashion communications and marketing communications, and I went to school for Ryerson, and it took, you know, I was in the program, and I felt like after interning at Flair that while I love fashion, the industry wasn't really for me. I realized that I wanted to be more of a leader, and it would take a long time to build yourself up in that industry. And so I was talking to somebody who actually worked at the school, Trevis. At the time, I was taking a couple of graphic courses at Ryerson. So I decided to leave and try out something new because I really love designing. I've always been creative. And I went to Trevis, and that's where I learned graphic design, web design, and all that. And once I graduated, I just kind of started freelancing. I didn't really have a vision in mind of what I was going to do. I just knew I wanted to work for myself. And I don't know, as time, you know, I started learning the internet. I started learning about Google. I started learning about SEO, and surrounded myself with people to fill the gaps of what I didn't know, like programming and more difficult back-end development. Honestly, it just grew organically. Like I had a condo in Toronto, and I slowly started bringing people to work in my condo. And then clients would even come there. It was a really cool layout. It was a loft style layout. So you can use it kind of a work live.
Nice.
And after a while, I was like, okay, I got to move out of here because I should probably, and I say should with emphasis because, you know, I'm thinking, okay, my next step should be to open an office and build that sort of agency platform. And I did that. And then I realized like this whole time, I never wanted to really stay in Toronto, but I was grounding myself in Toronto. And after a few years, I was just like, okay, I'm done. I got to get out of here. This is it for me. Like, you know, LA was always in my mind's eye. And, so I left 2 years ago. I still had the office open. After 6 months of being in the US, I realized it was time to close down the office, take down the overhead and be more in the creative aspect of it instead of the manager aspect of it because I lost that along the way. So here I am in LA with doing what I love and being extremely creative and launching brands all over North America. So it's really cool.
So when you made that move, U2R1 became a smaller, I guess, more efficient agency?
100%, yeah. I realized that people think about, you know, I'm going to have this agency, and it was kind of like this, you know, vision that you have, oh, I'm going to do this and it's going to be awesome. And you don't realize, and I learned a lot about business doing this, that there's cash flow to deal with and there's employees to deal with and there's payroll and management and all that stuff. And all of a sudden I'm like a manager and everyone else is doing the creative and I just have to, you know, worry and stress about the business development, which was the opposite of what I love doing. And right. At some point I was like, I got to quit my job. I don't like this anymore. I'm going to tell my boss. Meanwhile.
Yeah. So being your own boss, how did you take that?
Yeah. Well, I closed down the office.
Take that.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, that's great.
Myself.
There you go. And you're in Manhattan Beach, is that right?
Actually, Santa Monica. I did start in Manhattan Beach because when I was in Toronto, I still had clients in LA. I actively sought out clients to work in LA so that I could transition easier and understand the market. So at that time, when I would come visit here, I often stayed in Manhattan Beach. I really liked it there. But when I did move here, I had a friend in Marina Del Rey. And we decided to move into Marina Del Rey. And then I have office space in Santa Monica, shared space in Santa Monica. And so I moved more into this area, which I really love.
Okay. Yeah. Great. Well, this is one of my favorite questions that I ask all of the Busy Marketer guests. As a matter of fact, I created an entire episode, episode 15, on this same subject. So tell us about your marketing philosophy. What is your mantra when it comes to the way you run your digital marketing?
Well, doubt is the decision not to participate. That's my mantra in business and in life and in marketing. And the reason being is that I learned early on that if you embark on any project or any business or anything in life and you go in with doubt, then your likeliness to fail is much higher. And you're always surrounding yourself with fear. And I get this a lot with clients. Like I like to vet my clients. Like I don't take on every single client. I think there's a fit for everybody.
Sure.
And I love when clients come to me and they're like, I'm all in. And, you know, I understand there's no guarantees in life. And we're going to put our best foot forward. And we're going to do what we got to do to make this work. And they come in with confidence. And if they fail, they understand it's part of life, you know, and business. And they just get up and do it again. Then you have clients and people who are like, I don't know, I'm investing so much money, is this going to work? I'm very doubtful, I'm not sure. And you know what, honestly, most of the time it doesn't work because they're just going in with the fear and it just doesn't manifest success. You're not attracting the success to you. So
that negativity is contagious.
It's very contagious and people can feel it. You can honestly, people can feel that your confidence or lack thereof through an email, through just how you put yourself out there. And it's the energy behind your marketing campaign, behind everything that you do. And if you're doubtful, then you should not be an entrepreneur. You shouldn't be in business because you can't ever fear failure. It's just life.
Right.
You know? You're always going to fail. So what?
Yeah, but it's how we learn from that, that makes us stronger, makes us better. Okay. One of your strengths is in branding from some of the talks that we've had. And I think we can both agree that many people don't understand branding. So start us off by talking a little bit about what branding is.
Branding is your story. It's talking about how people will emotionally communicate with you and feel you as a company. So if you look at the amazing brands out there like Apple, even like when I walk into a Hilton hotel, I know exactly what to expect. When I walk into an Apple store, I know exactly what to expect. When I walk into an Audi dealership, I know what to expect. And I know what to expect because these companies have done such a good job in communicating their brand. And you don't have to be a huge company to have a strong brand. And I think what most people don't understand as a startup is that they say, okay, I'm going to just design a logo and there's my brand. Right. And honestly, it's like, oh my God, no.
So your brand is not your logo.
No, it is not your logo. It's part of your brand. Your logo is important. But, you know, when I say, okay, you want to do a social media campaign. So how do we communicate to our audience? What's the voice? What's the message? What's the visuals that we continuously, you know, are consistent? And when people, like usually clients are like, oh, I don't know. You know, and that's when I'm like, okay, well, I'm going to show you these brand books that we've developed. And as soon as they see that, they're like, oh, wow, I never even thought about positioning my company this way. And it opens up a whole new awareness for them. And, you know, you need to be able to tell your story very quickly. You need to be able to make sure that your brand is so strong enough that you're actually, your public is talking about you the way you want them to. You're leading them into a conversation so that you're not vulnerable for other people to say things about your company that aren't true or aren't part of what you represent. And that's really what branding is having such a strong identity that people love what you do. They emotionally connect with you, and then they talk about you to other people in a way that you would talk about yourself. And that's really a good, and then the visuals to support that.
So why do you think that people seem to be so misled and think that their name or their logo, why do you think it is that they don't really understand the branding?
I think it's just a lack of education, and it's something that's kind of intangible. And I often relate it to PR, you know, branding. It's not something that it's tangible, but it's intangible because it's something that it's a story that's out there. You can't really measure ROI from your brand the way people measure ROI. It's the same as PR. Like, you really hire a publicist to get you out there, right? And they're going to either get you in the news or interviews, or they're going to put you on social media and stuff like that. But how do you measure the exact ROI from that? And when business owners have something in mind, it's this, a lot of them are very literal. Like, I'm going to put this ad out there and then I'm going to see what comes back from it. And I'm going to be able to measure that through sales. But branding isn't like that. Branding is a loyalty building endeavor that takes time. So your ROI comes from probably longevity and loyalty. And I always tell clients, there's two ways of measuring ROI. You have your immediate ROI from your direct sales and from your, you know, direct marketing approaches. And then you have your ROI from branding and brand visibility and brand loyalty that takes time to build. And so you see that in a longer, could take a year, could take 6 months, could take 5 years. I don't know, depending how you're supporting it through your marketing, but that's how you're going to measure. So people get nervous about that. Well, if I can't measure it right away, then I don't want to spend money on it. You know, they don't realize that that investment actually supports all their sales and their direct marketing. So it's all linked together.
Exactly. So it takes time to see that return. Let's talk about somebody who is new there's so many companies out there. I mean, startups are the big thing these days. You know, everybody's talking about the latest startup. So if a startup company was to walk in your door, what would you tell them to get them started in branding?
I have a process that I go through with the clients, any clients, and I ask them, you know, first of all, I need to understand what their budgets are and how in depth they want to go with their branding. And I guide them. So if they have, you know, investors and they have a good budget, then we go through a full fledged branding exercise and we develop a full on brand book and a brand plan. But if they have a scaled back budget, then I recommend that we start at least get the basics done. So what's your mission statement? What's your vision? What's your values? And how do you want to communicate to your audience? You know, are you a fun brand? Are you a serious brand? Are you cheeky? You know, are you informative? Are you educational? And understanding that, now we know how to communicate through our marketing channels. And it starts with the questionnaire that I give them. They fill it out and they start learning a lot about their company and who they are as a company. And then we start building the content from there. And then we start developing the visuals as a result, understanding how we want to emotionally connect. So it really depends on where they are in the phase of how they want to, you know, how big they want to launch themselves. But it's even on a small scale, understanding the basic elements of your brand is going to at least help us get started with a website or a marketing initiative or however they want to communicate their business to the world.
Great. Do you have any brands that I would say that you enjoy watching or interacting with, or brands that you particularly look up to?
I love Audi. I think that they're just such a great brand. And it's funny because I'll look at other cars, and it's not just about their commercials. It's kind of like their presence, you know, the way they are in a luxury car industry. It's not a car that everybody has. Like, a lot of people who want a luxury car will own a BMW. And even like their features in comparison, the product, a BMW probably has more features and is a better car in terms of like more gadgets and stuff like that. But it's the brand itself, that it's not like I'm so out there, I'm so flashy, but right. I'm cool enough that you want to be part of my community kind of thing, my brand community. But I'm not so like, I don't like flashy brands. I'll give you an example. Like one time, a long time ago, I bought a Louis Vuitton purse and I was like so excited. It was my first designer, you know, purse. And I was like, it was expensive. And I was like all excited. And now I hardly wear it. And it's so like, I love the understated luxury, and that's what Audi is, you know, instead of like plastering your logo everywhere or being that like, yeah, I drive a Beamer or whatever. And nothing against BMW, nothing against people who drive them. But for me, I connect more with a brand like that's understated, but still powerful. And that's why I like, you know, an Audi brand.
Like sure. That. I can totally see that. We're a Volkswagen family here. You know, Volkswagen is the parent company of Audi. Mm-hmm. And there's a certain simplicity. It just works. And that's very similar to Apple and the way they do things. There's something about the way they think and put their user first. They don't need all of this excess, this flash. They just need stuff that works and that makes sense to the user. I see a lot of that with websites as well, having issues with just too much technology, and it's built for the programmer and not for the user. And no offense to anyone that owns a Japanese car, but when I jump into a Japanese car, especially a Toyota, I try to work the navigation systems and the cruise control. It drives me crazy. It's great that they have all of these cool gadgets, but they didn't think about the user when they were building it. That's why when given a choice at the airport car rental center, I always choose a Volkswagen. Because when I get in that car for the first time in the middle of the night and have to drive for an hour on roads I don't know, I don't want to have to think about how to use the car. The bells, the whistles are there, but they're built around the user and not the technology. Volkswagen, Audi, and Apple, they do a great job with that and explaining that. They do a great job of communicating it to their customers with their branding.
Yes. And you know, it's a good brand is a brand that you feel loyal to and you love and you don't even know why. You know, it's kind of like, I just love I want like Tesla, for instance, you know, like I love their brand just because of what they stand for.
Sure.
You know, it's not even the, like the fact that they made their patents public, you know, for me, that's business consciousness. And I'm a big believer in business consciousness. And a company that goes out there and says, you know what, we're not going to hoard this. We're going to give it to the public. It's just something that's like, we're sharing our information and we're okay with that because we're so secure in our own brand. And to me, that's like, wow, you guys are awesome. And I will so own a Tesla one day, you know, just because of that.
Yeah.
And your beautiful car and your conscious and your business. And that's like the types of brands that I think are so powerful. And then there's brands that are powerful that people follow that aren't that great, you know, like McDonald's or whatever, things that are, don't do. I mean, I know McDonald's does some good things in the world that help balance it, but you know, it's just a matter of the individual and their values. And that's how a good brand says, okay, these are our personal values. So our target audience will have similar values. And that's who we know we're going to target. And you have to have that in mind because everything in life is about values. That's how we live our life. So that's, you know, a good brand knows who their target audience is and what their values are. And then they communicate the same values.
That's very good. That's very good. Is there anything else you'd like to share with us about branding before we move on to our next segment?
I just think that if you're a business, educate yourself on the importance of branding. Even hire, you know, a brand consultant to maybe teach you a little bit. You don't have to go full on into building a huge brand before you understand the importance of it and the importance of it for your own specific business. The more you know, the more successful you'll be, the more you'll have a grasp on marketing and that whole aspect of business development. Because the one thing I learned from clients is they're like, well, I don't understand marketing, or that's not what I do. Or so they get nervous because it's like not their expertise. And guess what? As a business owner, you know, you have your specialty. It's either a product or a service. That's what you know. So good. You don't have to know everything, but it's good to learn the basics because it'll help you understand who you're working with and why you want to work with them.
Great. Okay, let's move on to our next segment. It's time for all of us busy marketers to come together and share our stories. We all face many of the same challenges, and this is the time where our listeners get the benefit of learning from your experiences, Sari. Welcome to the group therapy session.
Okay.
I am a big believer in learning from past mistakes, as we mentioned before. Some successes are the result of lessons learned from trial and error. So tell us a story about when things didn't work out quite as planned. Tell us a story and what you learned from it.
So, yeah, I mean, I've been doing this for 12 years, so there's always going to be times where, I mean, challenges always happen, always. And I'm always, always learning. But there's one story when I was just started out. This was actually before social media and all that stuff. And I had this idea. I wanted to create this amazing event, and it's going to be business matchmaking, and we're going to match up people with other people. And then it was kind of like a networking event kind of thing. But I'm a big go big or go home person. So, and being in fashion and being a visual person, I brought on a partner of mine. She's a photographer and also very visual. So we're like, okay, let's make this grand winter wonderland. We're going to have acrobats. We're going to have snow on the ground. We're going to make it like absolutely gorgeous. It's going to be incredible. We're going to sell tickets at $300 a pop and get 100 people in there, make, you know, like $30,000, and we're going to be awesome. And okay. So fast forward, one of the most stressful times in my life. Not ever, ever doing hosting an event in my life. No social media to market this on. Like, that didn't even exist at the time. We put together this huge event. It was very difficult to sell tickets. So in order to fill it up the place, we had to give away a lot of tickets. The event was absolutely gorgeous. It looked exactly how we wanted to do. And at the end of the day, we were out $30,000 instead of made $30,000. And I'm like, I am not an event planner. I never want to do this again. You know, like everyone had a great time and I came out of it a lesson learned, like many lessons learned. And, you know, I was very young and naive and didn't understand how to create budgets and all this other things that you need to know to make something successful. So that was a huge learning experience. And needless to say, we both went to Jamaica after that and like just took off from the world. We're like, we're done. We need a huge break.
Start over.
Was the end of that. Yeah. So it took a while to pay that off, but we learned.
Well, at least it looked beautiful, right?
Yeah, it did. It did indeed.
Okay, Sari, let's talk about efficiency. Efficiency is the key to being a successful busy marketer. You know, we all wear many hats and we can't afford to be distracted by every new bright, shiny object that the digital marketing world is always throwing at us every day. So we have to make some smart decisions to be efficient so we can focus on the important tasks. What I want you to do now is to share with us a time when you made changes to become more efficient. And I can kind of see where this is going, but tell us a story and what steps you took.
Well, you know, every moment and everything is a learning experience. And when I did have my agency, you know, I was very, very loyal to my employees. And sometimes, you know, in my industry specifically, there's months that are extremely lucrative. And then there's slow months like December and January, nobody's signing contracts. Nobody's doing business. It's very slow. Like people are focused on, you know, Christmas and the holidays and they're away. And there's some months in the year that are like that. And then there's some months that it's actually booming. So for me, I kept on the same overhead during the slow months and realizing that, you know, that can put you behind and you're always kind of playing catch up because, you know, salaries are expensive. So it's not like a few thousand dollars here and there when you have four or five employees. And I actually realized like what I needed to do to make my life and my business more efficient was to take down the overhead. It wasn't necessary in a virtual world anymore. You know, you don't need that fancy office with all, you know, those people on payroll. You need people who you can count on, who can jump on a contract basis, who you trust. And I think that's really important. And they're still part of your team. But I had this illusion in my head that I always needed to have like full-time people all the time, you know?
Sure.
And so when I scaled back, I made my life more efficient because during the slow times, I could focus on business development and not have to worry about paying people out of pocket or, you know, that stress about that. And then when it's lucrative, well, I bring on people that I need and it's great, you know, so it makes things run more efficiently and it takes down the stress levels tremendously.
Yeah. And you also gain more time to grow your business by doing that. Yeah, Sari, I love hearing these stories because I have the privilege of talking to marketers all the time, and many of them share the same frustrations. And I've been there dealing with teams as well. Going into the holiday season in the e-commerce world, it's crazy, and you need more people. You need more hands on deck. It can be very difficult to bring on that additional staff during the time that you need them and then keep them after the season's over. I learned to use virtual staff to outsource some marketing activities and to look for part-time help from the local universities and colleges.
Yeah, interns are amazing. I love interns. And they learn a lot too. It's not just like, oh, we get work for free. I've taught many people a lot of things. So that's really cool.
Yeah.
Interns.
Well, you know, the stories that we're telling, it helps other marketers out there to understand that they're not alone when it comes to different challenges. And learning from each other's mistakes makes us stronger. Learning from each other's the way we've changed to be more efficient, that makes us stronger. We can take these lessons and turn them into our own successes. So now I'd like for you to share a story of success with us, one that had the most impact on you personally.
Moving to Los Angeles has been the most rewarding experience in my entire life because, you know, I don't think, you know, people never really, I always talked about leaving Toronto and I always got the, yeah, whatever, you're not leaving, you know, kind of thing. And I'm like, you guys don't understand. Like, this isn't my home. I grew up here. I was born here, but I don't feel at home and I need to find a place I feel at home. And I found LA and I was like, okay, we got to do this. And my husband and I, you know, it took us a few years to get here. a lot of challenges along the way, figuring out how we were going to do it, because it's not easy with visas and all the stuff that you have to do legally and just packing up and leaving. And it just happened in a way that was so, I mean, one of the biggest things that I was worried about, my grandfather was in his 90s and we didn't want to leave him. We knew, you know, his end of days were coming.
Right.
And that was a challenge for us. And it just so happened that, you know, we came down in February of 2012 and my husband got offered a job here. He was transferred within, but it took till July to actually get all the stuff like approved. And that's how long it took just for that process. And it was actually crazy. My grandfather passed away on the day he got his official offer, and it was so divine. And it was almost like, oh my God, okay, so we know why it took this long and all this stuff happening. And even coming here, you know, I've had a lot of challenges, like kind of like starting all over again.
Sure.
I don't know a lot of people. I don't have my network, you know, and then the clients in Toronto are like, oh, you're leaving us. Okay. So, you know, they kind of want, even though I can service them, they want you there. So there was a lot of challenges in the transition, but on my worst days, I was still like, I'm so happy to be here. You know, it's just different. And it's just now I'm home. So it was huge for me to do this, and I'm never looking back.
Well, Sari, thanks so much for sharing those stories. And before we move on to our quick advice question segment, we're going to stop for just a moment and thank our friends. Over 9 million users and the world's top brands trust Hootsuite to schedule, manage, and measure their social media campaigns. Save time by scheduling hundreds of messages and launching multiple campaigns at once across multiple social networks. With Hootsuite Pro, you can manage up to 100 social profiles, including Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, Google+, Instagram, and YouTube from one web-based dashboard. Plus, you get to measure your social media campaigns and track performance with custom social analytics reports. Busy marketers, you can get your free 30-day trial and start running your social media like a Fortune 100 company by going to thebusymarketer.com/Hootsuite. Every year, 43% of computer users lose irreplaceable files. Even those who use on-site backup methods, such as CDs, memory sticks, and external hard drives, are at risk. Fires, floods, theft, and other disasters can render on-site backups useless. Carbonite Online Backup eliminates the risk of losing files by automatically backing up the irreplaceable photos, music, emails, financial records, and other valuable files on your computer to a secure off-site location. Carbonite takes less than 5 minutes to install and begins working right away to protect your most valuable files, continually updating your backup while you work without slowing down your computer. The Busy Marketer listeners can try Carbonite free today by going to thebusymarketer.com/carbonite. This is our quick advice questions. These are short answer questions, but feel free to elaborate on any of them as you see the need. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
All right. One, what one piece of advice would you give to every busy marketer?
Align yourself with talented people, because you cannot do everything. You can be the most talented at what you do and you still can't do everything. And that has been my best thing that I've followed my entire career, because having great people around me, even, and no one's going to be around forever, so don't get attached.
Right.
But, you know, having great people around you during that time, appreciating those people and leaving your ego at the door, because nobody really cares at the end of the day. They want the work to get done and they want it done amazing. And if you wrote that line, or if you drew that drawing, or if you designed that logo, it doesn't matter. You have to be part of a team and you have to be humble and really just work with amazing people who support you both personally and professionally.
Great. If you were starting a digital marketing program for an organization with only one or two people, in what areas would you focus?
Yeah, that's a hard one, because I customize strategies for all of my clients. I think that Facebook for business, I've had a lot of success in that area, but they like to make money. So it's really hard if you don't have a budget for ads. If you have a budget for ads, and you know your target audience and it's like business to consumer, you have a really good chance of being successful on Facebook. It's much easier to manage. And I always say, like, if you have a small team, are you going to put money into, are you going to put your time into labor? Are you going to put money into sort of promotion? Because when you, if you use Twitter, it's very time consuming. You got to converse with people. You have to be on there. You have to be talking. It's like constantly, constantly networking. And Facebook is more buying your fans, so to speak, not really buying fans, but, you know, paying for ads and paying for posts to be seen and things like that. So, you know, it's really a matter of figuring out first, are you focusing more on your time, labor, or are you focusing on money? And then once you know that, then I would say then either one of those streams would be a good way to build strategies.
Great. You know, Facebook of today is a very different creature than Facebook of 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, you talk about the interaction, things like that. It used to be that, you know, even a year ago, it was, you know, you put your post up there and you need to make sure that organically it's something that's good enough that you get that interaction, that people are talking back and forth. Now with the pages, because ads are so prevalent, I mean, there's such a big part of what Facebook is now, because they, you know, Facebook's public now, they have to make money.
Yeah.
It's more of a advertising type campaign. It feels more advertising than it was social media, I guess, for the business side.
Yeah. Oh yeah. And, but you know what? Like I'm personally taking a little bit of a Facebook hiatus right now. I often do that. I take, you know, some time off of it because it just gets so like too much, you know,
right.
You're just constantly distracted by it and it's just overwhelming and it becomes, you know, a news feed and like, and things that you're just always being fed information that you might not even want to be fed. But from a business perspective, I recently, you know, launched a product on Facebook. We got 20,000 fans in 2 months. And these fans were extremely engaged. And it was a combination of, yes, putting our ads out there. Our ads were successful, but understanding how to communicate the ads. And then once they got to the page, having really good content. And that's really important.
Right.
So if you know how to use Facebook, it can be very beneficial. But at the end of the day, yes, they want to make money.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah. And it used to be all about getting those likes. And that's still important, I think, to a certain extent. But mm-hmm. Nowadays with the custom audiences and different things like that, you know, Facebook's almost a method of, it used to be you want to interact with them on Facebook. And nowadays it seems like you're trying to pull them off of Facebook and back into your website.
Yeah. I agree with that. Totally.
So what new advances in digital marketing are you most excited about today?
Well, see, we're talking about ads and stuff, and I am in the business of creating advertisements and marketing. So I love video production. I love video commercials. I think it's the best way. And remember, you know, like, part of a generation where you used to like watch a video online and you'd have to sit there for half an hour for it to load and all, it was like, you know.
Yeah.
So now like you can get that to people really quickly. And I think video ads give me the opportunity to be even more creative than just image ads. And that makes me excited because I want to do that, more of that. I love doing video production and video commercials and online videos. So that's, I'm really excited about video ads coming into the social media market.
And combining that with the last question about Facebook. Facebook has come out with some very interesting new tools. The call to action buttons that you can embed in videos now is a great new product. You can create a nice, compelling video. And at the end of that, say, okay, now that you're convinced, or if you, we've got you kind of hooked, you know, go here to find out more information, or go here to buy now, or go here to download this particular product or white paper or whatever it happens to be. That in combination of the ability to create a custom audience off of the people who have viewed your video on Facebook, I think it's some really, really exciting stuff that's coming out to work on video these days.
Yeah. It's definitely. I mean, that, like I said, they're moving towards the more business marketing side of things. It is less of a personal social platform. And I think that's kind of where Instagram is right now. And it's like, I'm hoping that it just stays fun and personal for a while before they start taking that over. You know, it's just the area where Facebook was in terms of sharing content that's fun about your life that doesn't have an agenda. And, you know, people still use Instagram for marketing, but I still feel that it's primarily a personal platform where you can just have fun and share pictures and video, you know, not have to worry about what do they want from me?
I think Instagram works best for companies that give that inside look, like General Electric. General Electric is a pretty good example of how they'll go into some of their factories and say, you know, look at how this is being built. And, you know, you kind of get the backdoor access to certain things. NASA does a good job at that as well. And it's not, you know, kind of like the Lexus fail where they just posted one of their beautiful pictures of a Lexus and everybody's like, what is this? Get this junk out of my feed. You know, we don't want your ads.
Yeah.
You know, it's a complete,
they don't get it.
They don't get it. Exactly. Okay. So, well, since we're talking about social media like that, let's talk about if you could only use three social media platforms, which ones would you choose?
Well, right now I only have time for so much social media in my life, you know. It's very time consuming as a business owner. The ones that I use right now are Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. I've actually switched to being a bit more active on Twitter and less active on Facebook, just because, like I said, I'm getting tired of it. Those are my platforms. And I definitely recommend they're the top ones right now. I mean, there's many others, but I mean, I never really got into Pinterest and Snapchat and all that. It's just, I don't have time for it. I don't know.
Well, that's it. Yeah. My point generally is that if you don't enjoy social media, a social media platform, I don't particularly enjoy LinkedIn.
No, me either.
It's, you know, it's not my personality. There's probably a ton of potential clients there. And, you know, I'll interact if somebody wants to connect and interact. You know, I'll interact, but I don't spend that much time there. I'm very much like you. I'm very visual. Instagram's my absolute favorite. But if you don't enjoy that particular social media network, that social media platform, you're not going to do it well. And you're basically wasting your time. You could be taking the energy and effort you put into that platform and put it into one you enjoy and do it well.
Yeah, I agree. So, and I'm not a huge LinkedIn fan either. I never really got into it. I mean, I have a good profile. I have tons of people on my network. And I got more clients from Facebook and Twitter any day than LinkedIn.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, so.
Okay. What is your favorite time-saving tool that you wouldn't want to live without?
Well, the actual tool that I love is Google Calendar. I use that a lot and it just keeps me structured, and I have to, like, I'm from Toronto, and that's like one thing that's different from West Coast is like, I have to schedule everything. Oh, we're going to have a meeting. It's like, okay, it has to be written in. What do you mean? Like, I'll call you on the day of. What are you talking about? Like, that was such a change for me. You know, I'll just text you on that. I'm like, no, I need it scheduled. But, I've been changing with the mentality here. It's all good. But mostly, like, people are very time-saving for me. I know how to lead a team. I mean, I have to know that as a business owner. And when I have a really good team and everyone's doing their own thing, then it saves me a lot of time. I mean, my God, my people have saved me a lot of time. And interns have saved me a lot of time of just doing little things like, you know, updating your website or writing a blog or planning a social media calendar and all that stuff. You know, you have really good people and I can focus on what I actually love to do, which is the creative aspect. So.
Great. What one book would you recommend every busy marketer read today?
So there's a ton of marketing books out there, and, you know, I've read a few. I try to read things that aren't necessarily have to do with marketing because I do it all day long. So when I read, I like to sort of change my mind frame. But I mean, Malcolm Gladwell, he's great. Mm-hmm. But there's one book really like stands out for me. It's called True Prosperity. It's by Yehuda Berg. I actually named my corporation here True Prosperity Enterprises, Inc. in the US when I came and incorporated. And It's just a book about business consciousness. It's a book about how to run a business in a way that you're doing it through morality, you're doing it through humility, you're understanding when your ego is showing up. And it's just like more of a better way, I feel, that more people should run their business. And it's based on integrity. And at the end of the day, you can be the best marketer in the world, and if you don't live by integrity, what are you? You know, and you'll succeed or fail, and you might make a gazillion dollars and you might have like a million people following you. But at the end of the day, like, what are people going to remember you for? And they're not going to write on your tombstone, you know, he rocked at digital marketing. it's just, you know,
right.
It's going to be like, you will be remembered by the person you are and by the business owner you are. And, you know, Steve Jobs, for instance, like, how is he being remembered? Yeah, he created Apple and he's got all these amazing products. But his book, it was about who he was and the visionary that he was and his personality and how he treated people and all of that stuff is what people are going to remember him by.
Right.
And, you know, personally, I think Apple has gone down a lot since he passed. You can see the difference in the company and the technology that's coming out, which is unfortunate. But that's what people will remember him by. They're not going to remember him by how many dollars he had in his bank account. Yeah, he was really wealthy, but that's not what defines him. So, you know, business and personal, if I can, you know, say one thing,
sure.
Everyone says it's separate. It's not separate. Who you are as a person is what your brand is, and that's going to be represented in your business. The way you treat your employees, the way you put yourself out there, the way you talk to people, how you treat clients, all of that is part of your brand. And when we talk about branding, personal and business are equal. And don't ever think that one is the other, because that's just a way of treating people badly and using that as an excuse. And I don't buy it ever.
Have you ever told somebody that you didn't know very well that you were a marketer and they just kind of give you the stink eye?
Yeah.
it's
so weird. Yeah.
Well, it's because people don't trust marketers. You know, they think of sleazy salespeople, and it's those people who came before us that didn't do it with integrity.
You know, I never even thought about it like that. It's always like, oh yeah, I own a marketing agency. And they're like, oh yeah, whatever. Yeah.
You're trying to sell us something. No, go away.
I'm like, what do you mean? That's cool, man. I get to be creative every day. Like, how do you not see that as cool? It's like when you say you're a lawyer. Okay, I understand, you know.
Well, but, there you go.
You know, come on. Yeah, I never thought of it that way. It's a good point. But hold on. I'm a good marketer.
That's right. Integrity. Okay. Well, I'm going to put a link to that book in the show notes so everybody can go check it out. And Sari, thank you so much for your time today. Can you leave us with a quote to inspire other busy marketers out there?
Yeah. One of my favorite quotes is, you see things and say why. I see things and say why not. And that's by George Bernard Shaw. And it's just about, life is about creating and imagining and just, you know, that's who we are. We are creators, and we get so caught up in the rat race that we totally forget about why we're doing this many times. And it might sound cliche, but whatever, life is cliche. You know, if you're constantly running this high stress, you know, mentality in business, you're going to just burn yourself out. You're never going to enjoy life. And really, like, I don't care how good you are. There's no guarantees in life, and you really have no control over anything. So just create, build something that doesn't exist right now, an idea, a poem, a song, a book, a business idea, a product, whatever it is. Just do that, because we're meant to play with the universe. You know, we're here to play. Don't worry about the end results. Just be a creator, whatever you do.
Nice.
And I think that you'll always just love life that way.
That's great. Here to play. I love it.
Yeah.
Well, why don't you tell us some ways that we can connect with you online?
Totally. My business site is u2r1media.com. You can also find me at sarigabay.com. And Facebook is u2r1media Inc. or Sari Gabay. And then Twitter is Sari_U2R1. And I have Instagram, Sari Gabay or U2R1 Media. So Google any of that and you'll find me.
That's right. And it will be all in the show notes, so anybody can go there and check it out. And Sari, thanks again for your time.
Thank you so much, BJ. I had a great time.
Yes, let's hear it for Sari Gabbé one more time. All right, Sari mentioned that she uses a questionnaire to help her clients define their brands. After we finished up the interview, I asked if she would be willing to share some of those questions with all of you. She sent over the questions, and you'll be able to see some of them in the show notes. Just go to thebusymarketer.com/17. How do you define your brand? Be sure to share your story or ask questions in the comment section of the show notes. Now let's see what's new in digital marketing. Here's this week's top news. So what's going on in digital marketing this week? On Wednesday, Facebook announced that you can now measure conversions from Facebook ads across devices and in mobile apps. When I look at my ads reports, I can now add columns that will show me what device the user saw the ad on and what device they used to make the conversion. Very cool. Here's an example scenario that Facebook provided in their announcement. Imagine seeing an ad for a product on your mobile phone while in line at the bank. Do you immediately make a purchase on your phone? Probably not. But perhaps you go back to your office later that day and buy on your desktop computer. Such cross-device conversions are becoming increasingly common as people move between their phones, tablets, and desktop computers to interact with businesses. These new statistics will give us vital information about how our customers are going to interact with our campaigns and what devices they use. Check out this statistic. Facebook looked at people who showed interest in an ad on a mobile device before converting. So this was in the US. Over 32% of those people converted using a desktop computer within 28 days. They started with a mobile ad and 32% finished their conversion on a desktop. This is going to be some fun data to crunch. Last week, I reported on the new Facebook video tools. As a matter of fact, I experimented with adding a call to action button on one of my videos that you can see in today's show notes. Well, Twitter has finally decided to join the video party for some lucky advertisers. Twitter announced promoted videos on Tuesday. Earlier this year, they began testing out a Twitter video card, similar to their lead generation and website cards. Brands will be able to upload videos directly to Twitter rather than using a third-party system like YouTube. They're also offering a cost-per-view or CPV buying model for those ads. Brands, publishers, and a subset of verified users will be able to upload videos during this beta program. If you have a personal account that doesn't have the blue verified checkmark, like mine, at BJ Smith Strategy, come follow me, then you'll just have to wait. There's no word when or if it will be available to everyone, so we'll see what happens. That's going to wrap up our digital marketing news segment, but while we're talking about Twitter, let's talk about their remarketing capabilities. If you haven't experimented with remarketing on Twitter or Facebook, then you're missing out. They give you the ability to show ads to people on Twitter that have visited your website by placing a tracking pixel or a small piece of code on your site. The pixel places a cookie on the computer or device of the user when they visit your website. So when they visit Twitter, Twitter reads that cookie, and if there is an ad associated with it, it will show the ad to the user. You can create multiple pixels, so you can tailor the ads based on the pages or the content on your website that they viewed. I currently have 4 different Twitter pixels. One for my one-on-one strategy sessions page, one for my marketing bridge program, one for my general work with me page, which is the parent page for all of my services, and a generic tracking pixel for every other page. I use Google Tag Manager to fire off the appropriate pixels when someone visits my website. So Tag Manager lets me define rules for each tracking pixel code. On the generic pixel, it has one rule that says to include the tracking code on every page, and a second rule that blocks and kind of overwrites the other rule that blocks it from pages in the Work With Me directory. The block overrides the first rule so that I can use custom pixels for each of my services instead. I'll include a screenshot in the show notes so you can see what that looks like. It's probably a little bit easier to see it than explain it. Next, I have a tracking code for all of my services pages. It will apply to all of the pages under the Work With Me section, and I have rules to block it from the one-on-one coaching page and the Marketing Bridge page because I have specific tracking pixels for those services individually. If I add a new service page, then it will automatically be covered by this one kind of generic Work With Me section pixel. That's in case I don't create a special pixel for that product right away, or, you know, just being honest here, if I forget to create one. All of this allows me to create ads within Twitter based on the pages my visitors viewed. So let's say someone visits my one-on-one coaching page. Now I can create a Twitter lead generation card and it show only to those people that showed interest by visiting that particular page on my site. So those people are more likely to interact with the ad than someone who has never heard of me or my programs. I can cut down on ad costs by utilizing these highly targeted ads. I could also create a tracking pixel for my podcast. I create a rule that applies it to every page under the podcast directory so that anyone that visits the show notes page for any episode will get the cookie. Get the cookie. That sounds kind of odd, but you know what I mean. Place a cookie on their device. When a new episode comes out, I can let them know about it with an ad. Come to think of it, I'm going to add that to my to-do list in Trello as soon as I'm finished here. So even if you aren't planning to use Twitter retargeting right away, I encourage you to go ahead and set up the pixels on your site. The same thing with the Facebook pixel. It's not retroactive, so you can't track people that visited your site before you place the pixel. Twitter doesn't start tracking visitors until after the tracking pixels are in place. If you think about it, it really makes sense. Social Media Examiner has a really great step-by-step guide for setting up Twitter remarketing on your site. I'll place a link to it in the show notes. Okay, that's going to wrap up today's episode of the Busy Marketer Podcast. Remember that I'm available for one-on-one coaching. If you didn't get that in the last segment, I'm sorry, I probably over talked about it, but I think it was important for the demonstration purposes there. Sessions are starting at just $297 and are a great way to break through the walls that may be stalling your marketing. We can discuss ways to optimize your current marketing, get started with a new channel, or my favorite, just have a brainstorming session. Sometimes it helps to have an outside review from an unbiased party. There's a tab at the bottom of every page on thebusymarketer.com that you can use to schedule your session. And don't forget to check out my brand new Google Plus community. Join it, the Busy Marketer Support Group. It will be a friendly place to share stories and inspiration as well, and give and receive advice too. So let's go ahead and roll the music. Head on over to my website for show notes and links to everything we've discussed today, including Sari's contact info. Go to thebusymarketer.com/17. If you like what you heard, I would appreciate you leaving a rating and review in iTunes or Stitcher Radio. We need stars and written reviews so that more listeners like you can find the podcast. Tweet a link to the podcast and share the love by going to thebusymarketer.com/love, which will create a post that you can easily share on Twitter. You can also connect with me while you're there at BJ Smith Strategy. Thanks again for all the love and support. Until next time, remember to focus on the important tasks and have a productive week.